Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
11.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
1, 2.
Midway, the most important of the year.
3, 4.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
5, 6, 7, 8.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
It's not 10. You see, you're on 10 here. Where can you go from there? Where? To 11, exactly.
11.
Midway. So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on The Score.
Got a chance to talk about the stuff that Tom Ricketts said yesterday. I think in large part it was a success on the level that it's over. He did it, and he fulfilled the bare minimum of what he was supposed to do. He talked about it. There's no good answers for saying, yeah, your dad is a horrible racist and Islamophobe, is, will be, and there's nothing you can really do about it. I understand that. I understand all the practical realities of why he's doing what he's doing, but it's also a fail. Don't tell me he's a great man, and don't tell me that he doesn't believe it, and don't tell me you didn't know, and don't tell me that the news of the day made him a racist and Islamophobe. The news of the day didn't make him laugh at the N-word. Come on now. There's some stuff that just didn't fly.
We also talked about the baseball side of that conversation, had a chat with Sahadev Sharma about the Cubs being out of money, just choosing to not spend it. We talked a little hoops with Vincent Goodwill as well. The French Fencing Federation.
The FFF.
The triple F. The French Fencing Federation is borrowed from a galaxy far, far away. They have officially recognized lightsaber dueling as a competitive sport, and it grants the iconic weapon from George Lucas's saga the same status as the foil. I believe it is the epi. Is
that right? Epee.
Epee. French pronunciation is my foil. And the saber, the traditional blades used at the Olympics. Here's how the sport works. Dozens of us come to show up and watch. Combatants fight inside a circle marked in tape on the floor. Strikes to the head or body are worth 5 points. To the arms or leg, 3 points.
Okay.
On the hands, it's 1 point. The first to 15, or if they don't get there quickly, the high scorer after 3 minutes wins. If both fighters reach 10 points, the bout enters sudden death, which you would think with a lightsaber it actually would be.
No, but if you strike me down, you'll only make me stronger.
Where the first to land a head or body blow wins, a rule to encourage enterprising fighters. Now, it's interesting here. Is not only are there grown men and women who are buying hundreds of dollars worth of lightsabers and engaging in competitive sport while swinging them at each other, they actually light up their lightsabers and they make the noise and they do the whole thing.
But no, somebody has to make the noise.
Well, that's
you should have a designated guy who goes.
That was Ewan McGregor's problem and Hayden Christensen's problem on the set of Revenge of the Sith. They had to go back and edit it and take out all the sounds they were making while they were screwing around with the lightsabers.
Yeah, let's say Laura Dern, who was going pew, 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 pew every time she shot her blaster.
All the sci-fi movies. Yeah. It's just too much fun to not make the noise. Apparently, the rules are with the lightsaber fighting is that you can only score a point if the point of the sword points backward before you swing it. You know, so that like the jabs
right.
And like the whatever they are, the parries and the thrusts or whatever that happen in regular fencing.
Dodge, parry, thrust, spin.
All that stuff doesn't count. You've got to like swing it and swoosh it around so you get something more like a Phantom Menace, Maul, Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon Jinn kind of fight.
What about General Grievous?
Well, that's all the swinging and stuff. You get to do that, too.
He's a bad matchup, right?
Well, yeah, if you're swinging four lightsabers around, sure.
I see how he became general.
It's why Kenobi had to go to the blaster and uncivilized warfare to take him down.
Let's make that guy general.
No blasters.
The guy with the four arms? Yeah.
No blasters.
Right. This is a really cool story from NPR, and it comes to us from Cremona, Italy. So that means we're going to have wonderful names involved here. And it starts out, the prelude, with a Bach's Partita number 3 being played on a Stradivarius violin by Antonio Stradivari, who the luthier, you know the Stradivarius violin, Stradivari created this particular instrument. And the Violin Museum in Cremona is where these original ancient truly priceless instruments reside. The museum's chief conservatorist, Fausto Cacciatore. Fausto the Hunter. And he asked, what will these instruments sound like in 200 years? I hope they can still be played. You never know. All it takes is one unfortunate event. An earthquake, for instance. Think about what happened to so much art during World War II. So Cacciatore says the Stradivarius instruments need a 21st century failsafe. So what they did was first they enlisted a DJ named Leonardo Tedeschi of the Tedeschi Trucks Band and big-time DJ around there who runs AudioZone, which is a northern Italian sound engineering firm, and he took it upon himself. He's been contracted to take the sound of Stradivari and make it accessible around the world. He wanted, in 2014, he wanted to mix the analog sounds of Stradivarius violins into some electropop in electronic recordings. So he reached out to the Violin Museum, and they what they decided to do was record Stradivarius instruments and those of other master luthiers, saving the recordings in a database.
Okay.
So future composers could make their own music electronically. So the Violin Museum enlisted Lorenzi and four world-class musicians from Italy and the Netherlands to play a 1700 Stradivari cello, a 1727 Stradivarius violin, a 1615 viola by Amati, crossword name, and a 1734 Prince Doria by Guarneri del Gesù. And it was just like recording the voice tracking for a video game. They recorded every possible note that can be played on each instrument. Every single one. On the scale, pizzicato, with the bow, in combination. They said it's meditative concentration. And here's the problem, ambient sound. It's a city of 70,000 people.
It's a good-sized city.
It says there's a woman dragging a suitcase across cobblestones, the hiss of a street sweeper, bustling open-air market, and what they describe as typically boisterous Italians. The noise they make is audible to the 32 hypersensitive microphones, so they didn't know what to do. They went to the mayor of Cremona, Gianluca Galimberti. The mayor happens to be the president of the Stradivarius Violin Museum Foundation.
That's why they picked the spot.
That's right.
There you go.
So the mayor told everyone in Cremona, shut up! And he blocked traffic around the concert hall during recording, so the entire city agreed to quiet down so this project could be completed. It took 8 hours a day, 6 days a week, for five straight weeks, and they wrapped up earlier this month. But they have recorded for posterity every single possible note from these instruments.
And people got on board in the city?
The city was so proud of their museum. They made it as a city effort.
It's awesome.
Everybody be quiet so we can all get this done.
Has your boy gotten back into Fortnite? I know there was a lull for a time, now, okay, everything's...
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah,
everything is right with the world.
He still sucks, but he's back in. Now that they have the NFL skins that you can, where you can be an actual NFL player.
Yeah,
and there's like football stuff you can do in there, and yeah,
he's sold right back into it. So he wasn't able to attend Fortnite Live in Norwich, England, because you know he had the hockey tournament going on.
Okay.
But if he had been, he would have been roundly disappointed. Fortnite Live is becoming just like the Fire Festival or Dash Con or Nathan Con. Yeah, it didn't work out well. So they build it as Fortnite Live, a big old park that they had put stuff together where you would be building and fighting and archery and all this kind of stuff. You'd partake in actual real-life Fortnite. Tickets cost between 12 and 20 pounds. I guess that's like 15 to 25 bucks here. About 3,000 kids showed up. Entry for anyone not in possession of an early bird pass, and that ought to tip you off right away when there's tiers of tickets, all that kind of stuff. Massively delayed. Organizers blame staff shortages, but once inside, things did not improve. Here's the accounts from all the kids. It was terrible. What an absolute disaster. Not like advertised. We went for the early bird stuff, but nothing was set up. Best thing about the event was the burger I had. My son wanted to leave. As for the organizers saying it went well, what an absolute joke. I got tickets for tomorrow. I am not taking my son to get upset. I want a refund like everyone else. It's awful. I have a very disappointed 9-year-old. They should be ashamed. A tarpaulin lobbed over a van with a plastic slide sticking out the back was billed as a cave experience.
No.
No, they missed it. They missed it. So just another in a long line of swindlings and bamboozlings of those involved. The Fortnite Festival did not turn out the way it wanted to.
This is from Smithsonian.com. And the pictures with this are just hysterical. Humans aren't the only creatures that suffer from substance abuse problems. Horses eat hallucinogenic weeds.
They do?
And we also know that some eat killer grasshoppers, right?
Yeah, but that's an affliction.
Right. Elephants get drunk on overripe fruit. Bighorn sheep love narcotic lichen. We did a story about that. Remember the drunken wasps?
That's right.
They're eating the half-fermented fruit.
Another
thing. Monkeys' attraction to sugar-rich and ethanol-containing fruit may explain our own attraction to alcohol, some researchers think. Now, dolphins may join that list. Footage from a new BBC documentary series, Spy in the Pod, reveals what appears to be dolphins getting high off pufferfish.
Pufferfish?
Pufferfish produce a potent defensive chemical, which they eject when threatened. In small enough doses, however, the toxin seems to induce a trance-like state in dolphins that come in contact with it. The dolphins were filmed gently playing with the puffer, passing it between each other. Don't take two.
Just like college.
Passing it between each other for 20 to 30 minutes at a time.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Unlike the fish they'd caught as prey, which were swiftly torn apart. They said it was the first time dolphins had been filmed behaving this way. At one point, the dolphins are seen floating just underneath the water's surface, apparently mesmerized by their own reflections.
Is there, did one dolphin bring the pufferfish?
Whoa.
Did he hang around too long?
The dolphins expert, deliberate handling of the terrified pufferfish implies it's not the first time with the hallucinogenic rodeo. So they go out of their way to irritate puffers into puffing up and releasing their toxin, and then they pass it around like a Nerf football.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just go stare at their own reflections. And the picture of like the smiling dolphin.
Oh my God, yeah, he's smiling.
Like, hey, man. I don't know if they sound like the dying sea turtle.
They probably do sound a little bit like him, yeah. Right? They definitely know that guy.
Oh, sure.
They all swim in the same circles. got a place we can visit for dinner in Tempe when we head down. We might want to bring Parkins and McNeil, too. There's a pizzeria in downtown Tempe that is letting its guests add cannabis oil or CBD oil to its pizza and drinks. The owner, Christopher Palma of Spinelli's Pizzeria, says, "I truly believe in innovative forms of treating pain and mood disorders. And I'm so proud we're the first bar and restaurant in the area to offer CBD extracts to our guests. The oil is extracted from the cannabis plant. It does not contain psychoactive compounds, the part that gets people high, THC, according to the CDC. Spinelli's has 6 CBD-infused cocktails. They're available during the month of February. I'm sure we can give a call and get them to extend the thing. Or you can just add the stuff onto a number of different pizzas as you see fit. We're all going to be down there for a week. We've all got to make dinner plans."
I don't know a lot about the cannabinoids or CBD oil. If it doesn't get you high, what is it doing? What's the actual chemical mechanism that relieves pain?
I don't know. I just want to put it on my pizza and eat it and see what happens.
Okay. I don't even need the pizza. I mean, if it works, I'll just put the oil on my tongue. Right?
But I'm saying we can make dinner plans, and this might actually help us out as we all sit down to a pizza or two.
I'm in.
All right.
Do you remember the Apple IIe?
The computer?
Yeah.
With the giant floppy disk insert?
Maybe.
Okay. Vaguely.
A New York professor posted to Twitter images of his old Apple IIe. John Pfaff, on Saturday night, dusted off a computer that's been sitting in his parents' attic for decades. Not only did it still turn on, he put in an old game disc, and it asked if he wanted to restore a saved game.
It's the start to war games, isn't it?
And it finds one. He said it's a 30-year-old computer. He said, "I'm 10 years old again." The Apple IIe was the third model in the Apple II series, because I remember my cousin had the Apple IIc also. It was released in 1983. You could use upper and lowercase letters, full functionality of the shift and caps lock keys. So he restored a saved game of Adventureland, a text command adventure game.
Oh, those were the best.
Like Zork? Do you remember,
yes.
remember some of those? I love those.
Oh, that's awesome.
I love those text-only adventure games. Yep. In the room are, and then you had to put in commands.
Yep.
Go here, taste explore this. And you would, I absolutely loved those. Adventureland was actually released by Scott Adams in 1978. What shall I do next? And he's got pictures of all this stuff here. I'm on the shore of a lake. Visible items, water, golden fish. Sign says no swimming allowed here. And he says, I can't quite remember where I left off in this round of Adventureland. He also found Millionaire, Neuromancer, hell yeah.
Neuromancer.
And Olympic Decathlon. If you could hit this, you had to hit the space bar super fast to sprint. And there was this, you had to use a joystick for the shot put to like drop the elbow and then extend the arm in just the right timing to put the shot. So I was right there with him watching all this stuff. The long live this still functioning Apple IIe.
That is the Midday Midway. We do it every day here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Coming up at 11:40, we'll talk a little Blackhawks with Mark Lazarus. But I missed the first 4 or 5 goals of that game last night, tuned right in, and caught the next dozen. That's a finish
it was
for
great.
That team.
That it was is, great.
They are exactly what they are. Score a bunch, give up a bunch, 45, 90 shots in it. Sure.
That's the NHL hockey I grew up with. That's Edmonton Oilers. That's what hockey was for a while.
Nothing wrong with it.
Why not? Do that. More of that.
If you're going to be that way, be that way.
312-644-6767. When we come back real quick, did you hear that the Alliance of American Football almost went out of business?
In the update a couple of times, yeah, but I don't know the details yet.
So the details are pretty... It almost just crashed.
Well, thank God for a couple of dollars here or there. We'll get to the story next. It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Whoa, boy. Manny Machado.
That one a no-doubter. In fact, Leary Garcia never moved.
Breaking news. This, according to Jeff Passan, the verified Jeff Passan account, the MLB insider for ESPN, free agent star Manny Machado has agreed to a deal with the San Diego Padres.
That feels a lot like that. Yeah, we don't have terms on this yet. I'm sure something will come out during the show over the next hour and a half or so. But signing with the Padres is definitely a blow to the hopes of White Sox fans and the organization. The Padres have what's largely considered as one of the best farm systems in baseball. They've got San Diego. They've got a ton of cash. And to my mind, the most important thing to find out from here on out is what kind of money Manny Machado took to go to the Padres, what kind of terms those were, and exactly where you were as a White Sox organization. If you were competitive, if you were there with every dollar you could possibly offer him, okay, all right. If you were there and competitive, if you were there and making your best offer, that's one thing. If you weren't, there's some explaining to do as to why.
It's one thing when you lose out on a guy to the Yankees or to the Dodgers or to even the Phillies who are bragging about spending stupid money. But you wonder, had they shown up with the big check right out of the box instead of trying to play the market? I don't know. I don't know how close it really was. I don't know if the White Sox were simply used in this process as leverage to jack a price.
We knew from the get-go, though, that the White Sox had to be willing to be used as leverage. That's the situation they're in.
It just hurts.
Because as much as you created a place and a space, both financially and on the field, for Manny Machado to arrive and be part of this rebuild, for Manny to be a tentpole of the organization as you got better and moved yourself into contention in the AL Central, you're still not there yet. And what sucks about this being the Padres is they're not anywhere. They're going up against the Dodgers in their own division, who have been to as many NLCSs as anybody in the last handful, but the World Series have not gotten there. You're going up against teams that have formed themselves. So in order to square this and feel anywhere decent about the offseason you had as the White Sox, you've got to understand some things about the Padres first. You know, you got to understand what these terms are, and you got to understand that farm system that's they're developing. I mean, that's going to be, Dan, if that's Manny Machado at short, or rather Manny Machado at third for the Padres, that means it's Fernando Tatis Jr. at shortstop for the Padres. That means it's Luis Urias at second base for the Padres.
What makes it hurt more is that Fernando Tatis Jr. belonged to the White Sox, and he was traded there for James Shields.
Yeah, who we just heard Manny Machado taking deep just a couple of seconds ago. This is huge news in baseball circles. This is huge news really everywhere. And we'll find out exactly what the money is for Manny Machado, but that's a gigantic part of all this conversation.
Bob Nightingale says they offered an 8-year deal worth at least $240 million up to $280 million last week, and no one topped it. So it's important.
That's what he's saying about
the Padres deal.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to get this straightened out because Mark Feinsand, who reports for MLB.com, says it's a 10-year, $300 million contract, which would make it the biggest free agent contract in the history of American sports. So there seems to be a little hemming and hawing here around the edges. But north of 250 seems like a pretty decent place to put it at that point.
Yeah, Joel Sherman says the Dan Lozano asked for best and final in the last 24 to 36 hours. The Padres were at least $280 million. So
the Padres were at least $280
yes.
million.
Yes.
Well, this means something, too, about the offseason. And I've been saying this for a little while now. It feels bleak with everybody not signed. It feels bleak with these two top-tier talents unsigned as people are reporting to camps. But just because they haven't signed kind of means that there might be some money out there for them.
Ken Rosenthal confirming 10 years, $300 million. That is confirmed. Ken Rosenthal, 10 years, $300 million for Manny Machado to the Padres. This segment brought to you by National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic. Visit Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic in Schaumburg, February 22nd to the 24th. The nation's largest upland hunting and conservation expo focuses on bird dogs, wild game cooking, and hunting heritage. With over 400 vendors and great seminars, Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic has something for you. Visit pheasantfest.org. At the bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Don't miss Coach Collins and the Cats at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season for games against Minnesota and Ohio State. Tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. I still believe that there's no possible way the White Sox would have signed a deal with Manny Machado without having Jerry Reinsdorf sit down in a room and talk to him personally and look him in his eyes and talk everything over about what expectations are, etc. I don't know if that meeting ever happened. And if it didn't, a lot of this stuff with the White Sox was pure fantasy.
Well, if it didn't, does that mean that they just hadn't gotten to terms, that Machado wasn't quite ready to dance with the White Sox? Or does it mean that they didn't have enough money at the poker table to get to that conversation?
I don't know the answer to that.
We'll need that.
It tells me, though, if that meeting happened, it tells me something. If the meeting didn't happen, it tells me something. But Jerry Reinsdorf would not sign a deal like that unless he looked the recipient of the deal, the other party to that deal, in the eye. We want to know how you feel as a White Sox fan right now. What's running through your head? You can do the radio equivalent of kicking over a wastebasket or throwing something in your room. That's what we're here for. 312-644-6767. You got something to say about it? This is the place to say it.
The Padres are one of the smallest markets in baseball, and they've come up with apparently $300 million to sign a 26-year-old generational talent, a guy who can play shortstop for you now, and even if you don't like him there, he moves over to third base where he can be a gold glover, a guy who could be the focal point for a rebuild in San Diego that's been many, many years coming. That is a pretty incredible fact. And when you hear owners, whether they're large market or small market, when you hear owners crying poor and the Padres are able to find $300 million to sign Manny Machado, we'll find out what the opt-outs are too, because there are going to be some years where that guy's able to opt out and get back into free agency. There will have to be.
So the White Sox literally were holding a locker open near Yonder Alonso and John Jay.
Yeah, I mean, that optic was there, but there are empty lockers in spring training. I mean, veteran players get empty lockers. 10 years, $300 million is the number that they're playing ball with, which means that Bryce Harper will likely get something similar. That means $300 million's out there for these kind of players.
Probably today, right? Don't you think this happens real fast now?
If you're the White Sox and you're serious, if you were serious about Manny Machado, if you were, don't you call Bryce Harper now too?
I think you should. Don't you
swing back around?
You call him anyway. Tom and Monique, you're on the score. Hi, Tom.
Hey, I'm thinking along the same lines as you guys just said. It's got to be right on to Bryce Harper right now, and it's going to have to be north of $300 million. You had two generational talents that are 26 years old. You missed out on one. You have to go for the other one. Simple as that.
Yeah, I mean, if you were budgeting for one 26-year-old guy, you probably ought to be able to swing it around for the next 26-year-old guy. I don't know if you read the Ken Rosenthal. He's got the confirmation Machado at 10 years, $300 million, Passan and Feinsand both getting it done now, too. That's the largest contract to this free agent class, and it comes from the Padres. That's the largest free agent contract in the history of American sports. A free agent contract. Giancarlo Stanton was an extension. This is the largest free agent contract in the history of American sports.
Now, if you know Scott Boras, this kind of thing, where Dan Lozano strikes first, this is all about a measuring contest. And I guarantee you Boras now is going to want to top this.
I think that was their goal from the start. And I wouldn't put it past Boras and Harper to wait even a little while longer until you're actually playing games.
This is Arthur in Lakeview on the score. Hi, Arthur.
Hey guys, great show. As a White Sox fan, I'm tired. I'm just tired. As a Bulls and White Sox fan, it's exhausting seeing a lot of the same problems afflict both organizations. But as a Michigan fan, as a Northwestern grad, I'm over Rick Hahn. I think it's fair to say five years in, his tenure's been a failure. They've averaged 92 losses. They couldn't accentuate a core with a Cy Young winner, a viable number two starter, and two really good hitters at the top of the lineup. I'm tired.
They're still in the rebuild regardless, and I still think the Sox are going to be good.
Why?
Eloy Jimenez is going to be a monster.
By himself?
I think they've got some pieces on this team. There's still a lot of first-round draft picks that are coming up. I still think Moncada's going to be good. I understand you're angry, but there's no way you can say this rebuild has failed yet.
Well, I look at the roster, and I see a series of high-end prospects, and I haven't given up on Moncada. I think he's going to have a good year. But you are still counting on massive steps forward by virtually everyone within the organization, from Tim Anderson down to Michael Kopech and Jake Berger.
You would have still been counting on those things exactly. Even if you had signed Manny Machado.
Correct.
You still need all of those things to click.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, that's part of the ballsy nature of the Padres going out and signing Machado like this for 10 years and $300 million. That's the news of the day. Manny Machado has reportedly signed with the Padres 10 years, $300 million.
Passan says,
what do you got?
The opt-out is after the fifth season.
So that's after his age 31 season.
It's 10 years, $300 million with an opt-out. See, that's five. That is hard five, not three, not one.
That's pretty impressive.
That's a hell of a deck. I wanted to be with the Padres, didn't he?
The White Sox need, I would make sure that somebody has a real big number ready to report the White Sox had out for Manny Machado. You know, this is where you'd like to be able to use media as best you can. Use somebody and let them know that you were in this and bidding on this. But like you say, I mean, regardless of whether you've got Manny Machado or not, you have to get performances out of the young talent to get you there anyway. Manny Machado was just on a team that had nothing around it. It's the Baltimore Orioles, and they're projected to be one of the worst teams in baseball this coming season, maybe in the history of baseball. You can't be just one guy. You've still got to have everything else click.
We're all over it. We're talking about it. We're finding out what you think, reacting to the news. Manny Machado to the Padres, 10 years, $300 million, opt out after five. Did the White Sox get used, or were the White Sox never really in it? Did they just come up short? Were they not budging from their original offer? Now we will get all of the retroactive spin from all parties, and we're digesting it on what's kind of an ignominious day if you're a White Sox fan. 312-644-6767. We are WSCR, the score.
Welcome. Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
For now, I think, like you, I'll probably from time to time get a glimpse of something on Instagram, but unless there's a Twitter report from Wetbutt23, I'll probably just stay quiet on it. Took a great deal of self-control not to say the other one. So.
Yeah, probably a good idea not to, because we wouldn't have aired it anyway, because we couldn't. That's Rick Hahn. He's going to be available sometime around 4 o'clock today. I'm sure it'll be carried in one way or another by the McNeil and Parkins show here on these airwaves. But rough day. Just saw a tweet from Dan Rowan of Channel 9,
yeah,
who said he saw Kenny Williams in the hallway, who just said, we've had better days.
Yeah, you wanted to be in on this one at 10 years and $300 million. You needed... I assume they had the support and backing of ownership. I assume they had the baseball reasons to go sign him, the same way that we've kind of talked about and over and over again this winter. The White Sox had every reason, just like the Padres did, to want this guy for 10 years and $300 million. Turns out that, at least to one ownership group, the comments about wanting to be not being Johnny Hustle didn't matter a whole lot. Turns out that any concerns about positionality didn't matter a whole lot. 10 years and $300 million is an awfully lucrative contract, no matter which way you slice it.
Every time Yonder Alonso and John Jay either come to the plate or have a ball hit to them, whatever it may be, all you're going to think of is who's not here. That's the one downside to trying to sign the sizzle before the steak, or sign the sizzle to lure the steak. Is that now when you hear either one of those names, Manny Machado's brother-in-law,
yeah,
or buddy, all you're going to think of is, oh yeah, I remember why they got him.
The fact was is they had other reasons to go get players, because they don't have a lot of places for guys. They don't have a lot of guys for places. It's just they're filler. They're people to help you bridge between whatever you're going to do to open the season and Eloy Jimenez, and whatever you're going to do this year and
Luis
Robert.
But they're not neutral. It's not Nate Sheerholtz.
You know, of course not.
These, we knew what was going on. The team didn't deny it either. That if they were trying to sign these guys as some sort of enticement, now it looks kind of lame.
It's amazing to me that the worry of Yankees pinstripes that I'd held for a little while isn't the team going out and signing this guy. That it's the Padres, one of the smallest markets in baseball, an ownership group that doesn't have a history of spending a whole lot of money, and a rebuilding franchise that's stuck in the NL West trying to fight for wins. They went from 100 to 1 odds, it's on Superbook, they went from 100 to 1 odds to 50 to 1 odds with the acquisition of Manny Machado. It's not like they've created a current powerhouse. What they've created is a Manny Machado-led team that's going to wait for a couple of elite prospects to get to the majors. Some are already there, and then perform as big-time ball players. It is exactly the situation the White Sox would have found themselves in, had he signed on the South Side.
The Padres' current Pecota projected win total is 77. If you think Machado in that ballpark, in those environments with those opponents, projects as a 5-win player, that puts them up to 82, and that ties them for third in the division with the D-backs. At 82 and 80. But who knows?
There's a lot of fans, whether it's on Twitter or on the text line 67011, or your phone calls 312-644-6767. A lot saying 10 years and $300 million is too much money. Who's ever won a World Series with a player that wealthy? The fact is that the Padres and the White Sox and a couple other teams that could have gotten in on this have every reason to spend that cash.
And he's 26. It's not the Pujols contract.
He's not a dying man playing first base in need of a DH spot. He's not that guy. He's a guy who plays elite level third base, who's one of the best bats in the league, and you surround him with young talent that's ready to go win in the next year or two, and that $30 million is a drop in your bucket. You could sign other free agents to move around. You could get pitching if you need to and put that in, especially even with a $30 million paycheck. You had every reason to be right there at 10 and 300 with the San Diego Padres.
Mike in Las Vegas, you're on the score.
Hey, Burnsy. Thanks for taking my call. Kind of a sad day for us White Sox fans. Mm-hmm. But I want to say, you know, the last guy that called in couldn't be more wrong about Rick Hahn. I think he's done a fantastic job flipping major league talent for minor league prospects that are going to help us down the line, you know, three, four years from now. But I think Machado would have accelerated that. And before I can really say how I feel about the job that Rick Hahn did on this particular issue, I need to see what they threw in the center of the table. But I think Machado is a once in an organization player. Like, you're not going to see many like him in the future. We need a shortstop. Tim Anderson is not a great shortstop. He would have been great for the South Side, and I'm truly sorry he's not coming.
I think your sentiments are shared by many. I guess well said.
I'd said earlier that this would, you know, when Manny Machado didn't sign with the White Sox, if that were going to be the case, that it would hurt, and then you'd move on and get to watch Eloy Jimenez when he gets called up in 3 weeks after the season starts, that it would hurt, but then you'd get to watch Dylan Cease throw the baseball in the last month of the season, and you'd get to get around it. It will take, I might have been wrong a little bit, but it will take quite a bit of performance by a number of young players on the South Side in order to get over something like this. And even then, you'll look around that team and you'll say, boy, wouldn't Manny Machado have looked great in a White Sox uniform? Wouldn't he fit perfectly in the middle of that lineup, whether he's playing short or third? I don't really care. It's just that bat in that lineup fits. Padres felt that way for 10 and 300.
Mitch in New Jersey is on the score. Hey, Mitch.
How's it going, guys?
Hey, Mitch.
How you doing? I'd rather have Harper than Manny Machado, though. It's good for the small markets that they're gonna pony up all this crazy money. But I mean, Baltimore's not much bigger than, I think Baltimore's a small market than San Diego. And I guess he wore out his welcome in L.A. They didn't make much of an offer to him.
But the size of the market doesn't matter.
They got Corey Seager coming back.
Yeah, every team can afford both of these guys if they want.
I just think, what's going to happen when Mike Trout hits the free agent market?
He'll make a lot of money. Yeah, thanks for the phone call, Mitch.
I don't know where
we were headed there. The wonderment now, really. I mean, listen, if you want to sit in your disappointment, you absolutely can. That's your God-given right as a Sox fan or a baseball fan that wanted to see it happen on the South Side. But my question now is, how quickly can you spin to Bryce Harper? Why stop? You understand what I'm saying? Why stop? Why get yourself out of a market that you were otherwise seemingly committed to? I understand that things have intensified with the Phillies. Who gives a damn? Now you know the terms.
I'm laughing.
Now you know what it takes to get a 26-year-old generational player. It's 10 years, $300 million. You have one more piece of information at your disposal. Use it and get aggressive.
Now, Shane Reardon's really mad. As you know, he's a true White Sox fan, and he's walking down the halls kicking things and creating content. And he just tweeted exactly what I just mentioned. Every time I see Yonder Alonso or John Jay this summer, it's going to feel like I'm looking at a sweater in the bottom corner of my closet that an ex-girlfriend left behind. Please come get your sweater. I don't want to look at your sweater anymore.
Ex-girlfriends don't leave sweaters.
Does
they take hoodies.
Does the coat rack last the day?
Oh, you think he's going to break the coat rack?
I think the coat rack lasts.
I think so.
I think it'll make it.
He's a sweater. It's Bill on Capitol Hill on the score. Hi, Bill.
Hello, lads. Awful nice of you to offer us hugs today, but I think with White Sox fans, it's more like running a suicide hotline for lemmings. You might as well save your breath. I think you guys are onto something. I mean, the fact that I was already sort of just in my head reconciled to the fact that he wasn't going to be a White Sox because I know how much God hates us. But the fact that a small market team like the Padres, a fellow small market team like the Padres was able to swoop in, I mean, it sort of materializes my fear, and I think a fear of a lot of other White Sox fans, that even though we were grateful for the rebuild, the anxiety was it was coming too late. It was coming at a time when all these other teams are doing it. And I mean, if you look at the competitive landscape, the NL, it seems to me, is shaping up to be much tougher in the next few years than the AL. And the Boston is awesome. Houston is awesome. New York is awesome, potentially awesome. But, you know, like, there's not a lot of sort of good middle tier teams that you can. I mean, there's just a lot of junk in the way that you can just take for granted and rack up wins. Whereas the NL, I mean, as you point out, I mean, you've got three teams in the West, and you've got three to four teams in the Central, at least, that on any given day could give you a bad time of it. And so it's, you know, I'm going to march back off the cliff. Thank you for letting me do it.
Enjoy your march.
The Lemming Suicide Hotline is at least delayed it for a little bit.
James Fegan, who covers the White Sox for The Athletic, tweeted this about 2 minutes ago. Kenny Williams said the White Sox felt they were the high offer on the table. The quote is, "I'm wearing my shades so you can't see the shock in my eyes." 10 years and $300 million, the number that the Padres have reportedly gotten Manny Machado for, an opt-out after 5 years. And the White Sox, according to Kenny Williams, as quoted by James Fegan here, thought they had the money on the table.
What?
Well, the question now is how much?
Wow.
How much did you think you had on the table? How high did you want to play poker?
Or did he sign for less than you had out there? Which would be even worse.
If he signed for less, then he hates his family.
Well, we don't...
Right? If he signed for less with the Padres, then he's not really a big fan of his brother-in-law, and he's not really a big fan of his best friend or anymore. Right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, it sounds like the White Sox were the perfect foil for Manny Machado in this case. Again, I've got to answer the question. Did he meet individually, did he meet directly at a table with Jerry Reinsdorf? That will tell you about the seriousness here. That will tell you whether or not... It'll help me... It helped inform my feelings as to whether or not the White Sox simply got used. We're talking about it here. Don't go anywhere. We are breaking down the signing of Manny Machado by the San Diego Padres, not the Chicago White Sox. Bernstein and McKnight, you got the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.